This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know it's
Taz and Moose. Hey. It is Taz and the Moose with you. Mark Melusis flying solo here on this Tuesday morning on CBS Sports Radio. We're taking you right up until 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 Pacific, and we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully. Make sure to go out there and mortgage confidently. Week 14 of the NFL season in the books following the Monday night victory last night by the Seattle Seahawks as they are in the driver's seat to be one of the wild card teams in the NFC. Now 8-5 after their 21-7 victory last night. Minnesota Vikings continue to struggle and putter along as they are 6-6-1. As they, by their fingertips and fingernails, hold on to that last wild card spot in the NFC playoffs. But they've got a lot of work to do here moving forward. Certainly, we chat about that in hour number one. Talked a little bit about LeBron and Wade, final game on the court together last night in Los Angeles. What ended up being a Lakers victory. We kick off hour number two here on this Tuesday morning with a little pigskin pileup.
It's now time for the pigskin pileup. Taz and Moose circle the wagons around the NFL.
We certainly do. And to really nobody's surprise, we begin our journey out in Oakland as the Oakland Raiders organization has parted ways with general manager Reggie McKenzie. And you knew it was just a matter of time. Once Mark Davis gives John Gruden the contract that he gave him, a 10-year deal, Gruden leaving the Monday Night Football booth to get himself back into coaching and going back to an organization in which he began as a head coach of the National Football League and trying to bring the Raiders back to their glory days in the National Football League. You knew it was just a matter of time. Listen, Reggie McKenzie was not going to survive it. And all the players that you've seen McKenzie bring into that program are now gone. Amari Cooper, gone. Khalil Mack, gone. There were reports earlier in the season before John Gruden cut it off at the knees that maybe they wanted to part ways or get rid of, Derek Carr and find themselves a new quarterback. I mean, it has been an amazing transformation for a team that is now 3-10 after 14 weeks following their upset victory over the Steelers this past Sunday. But you know, you get it. It's about relationships. And I understand where Gruden's coming from. Not saying that McKenzie can't do a good job or that McKenzie's not a good talent evaluator or that he won't get another job in the National Football League or that everything's right and fair. This has nothing to do with right and fair. This has to do with guys bringing in guys that they want, that they're comfortable with. They're running the organization as they see fit. And John Gruden has been given the keys to everything. It's his franchise. That's it. Mark Davis owns it, but it's Gruden's franchise. And he wants to make sure that he is the guy moving forward. So he is going to bring in his guys. And that's why McKenzie is out. Now, do you trust it? Listen, I was all for Gruden coming back in the National Football League. I was. Is there an adjustment period going from the broadcast booth back to the NFL sidelines? There's no question about it. There's no doubt about it. Did he make great use of the talent? No, he didn't. Listen, I don't know exactly what went down with Khalil Mack. I do know this. The Raiders didn't want to pay him. Whether that came from ownership, whether that was McKenzie, whether that was Gruden, they didn't want to pay him. So now he's a member of the Bears. I do know that for an offensive-minded coach, the fact that Amari Cooper has gone down to Dallas and starred the way that he has, whether it be in the Thanksgiving game against the Redskins, whether it be the 200 yards receiving that he had this past Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles, that also is not a good look on John Gruden because Amari Cooper, the only thing that he grabbed headlines this year with the Oakland Raiders was concussions. That was it. He had one game in which he starred with the Raiders. That was it. There were a lot of games in which he had one and two receptions. He goes down to Dallas. He's completely transformed that offense. That's not a good look for Gruden. Now, we'll see what they do with that first-round draft choice they got from Dallas. And the Cowboys are certainly ecstatic that they have Cooper because it changed the dynamic of their offense, made the job easier for Dak Prescott, and really changed the course of their season, what Amari Cooper's been able to do at the receiver position. He's made everyone's job just a little bit easier. But Gruden, we'll see if he sinks or swim. I'm going to root for him. I think the Raider fan base deserves it, even though we're going to be heading out to Las Vegas in short order. And you feel bad for the Oakland football fan. But McKenzie needed to go. And it's Gruden's team. Here's John Gruden.
Well, we won a game last night. I went home. And, obviously, there was a meeting last night, and changes have been made. And I respect everything that this organization is about. I can't exactly answer why the change was made last night, but changes were made. And we got to continue to fight and continue to build this team back, and that's what we're going to do. It's like to wish Reggie McKenzie the best. And he's a good friend of mine. He's always going to be a Raider. And we're going to have to rebuild this football team without him, but I will assure the Raider fans that we'll do everything we can to find the right replacement. He left some big shoes to fill, and just want to wish him the best.
Well, I mean, you could call BS on that guy. I mean, the idea that John Gruden went home after the win, put his head to the pillow, and then woke up and saw on Twitter that Reggie McKenzie was fired or let go as GM of the Raiders, and he had nothing to do with the decision-making process. I mean, come on. Let's be realistic here. I mean,
it's like to wish Reggie McKenzie the best.
It's almost comical. It really is. What guys want you to believe in, guys, what people want you to believe in today's day and age, it's really comical. But, I mean, whether it be Gruden's power, whether it be frustration for McKenzie, whether it be the relationship with Mark Davis, you knew it was just a matter of time. Once you bring Gruden in and give him the control that he has, it was just... McKenzie was going to be out in short order, and he didn't even survive the 2018 season. So we go from Oakland, and we go to New York, as the Giants have won four of their last five, and as we mentioned in hour number one, have made themselves relevant once again this football season. Now, it would take a miracle, and they've got to win out. They can't afford another loss, and Giant fans are going to look back to the Carolina game. They're going to look back to the Eagle game a few weeks back down in Philadelphia, in which they blew a 19-3 lead and say, what coulda, woulda, shoulda. Well, I mean, it is... they're in the position that they are in of their own doing. Now, they've got to win and continue to win. But as this team has played a lot better and Saquon Barkley continues to run roughshod over every opponent that the Giants go up against, they've made improvements along the offensive line, and that unit has come together as well as a group. 2 months ago... you basically wrote it down in, in pen that Eli Manning was going to be done as a Giant quarterback after this season. As this season has rolled along, as the Giants have won 4 of 5, there seems to be more and more belief within the Giants facility that Eli Manning will be back in 2019 to quarterback the team. Now, I don't know what the financials will be. I don't know if he needs to restructure his deal. But there are a lot of people within the Giants organization that believe that he will be the best option at the quarterback position next season. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think they're that far off. I'm telling you, and I've defended Eli, I don't think he's played great football. He certainly didn't in the first 8 games of this regular season. But if you mean to tell me that there will be a better option, now the Giants have got to find their quarterback in the future, and I don't think it's Kyle Laletta. And I know this is not a great quarterback class. And they were in a position with the number 2 overall pick this past April to draft Sam Darnold, who ended up falling to the Jets 3rd overall. And the Jets are ecstatic that he is quarterbacking their team. But is Teddy Bridgewater going to be a better option than Eli Manning next year? You're going to tell me Kyle Laletta going to start opening week for the Giants? Alex Tanny going to start the opening week for the Giants? Where exactly are you going to go if you're the Giants for your next quarterback? I think it's going to be Eli. It's nobody from this, and nobody from the college ranks that are going to be ready to start right away. Even if Herbert from Oregon comes out this year, he's not going to be ready to start right away. He's a little raw. He's a 6'6 kid. He's got all the physical attributes that you want, that you like. But I think it would be the right call for the Giants. I really do. I don't think they'd be all that far off. You go back, you bring him back in 2019, see how the rest of the season does play out. You make improvements along the offensive line, make an improvement, a tweaker here or there to that defense as well. You bring Landon Collins back, who's going to be a free agent in the offseason to play safety. And you go on your merry way and you take a shot. Now, some would make the argument that the way that the Giants finishing out this year might be the worst thing that could happen to the organization. I don't think that is. I think anytime you line up, you want to try and win. And if you're Pat Shurmur, first year as head coach of the Giants, you're trying to build a winning culture and fumigate the team from the McAdoo era for the past couple of years. I think it would be the right call. I think when you look at it, I think bringing Eli Manning, I think you can win with him. I think you make sure you have the right guys around him. Certainly the skill positions are set. If the offensive line can take a step forward or two next year too and protect him and make him feel comfortable in the pocket, I think Eli Manning can still make all the throws. I mentioned it last hour. Intriguing when you look at Tom Coughlin and the possibility of him returning back to the sidelines for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2019. A team that he helped build when they were an expansion team a number of years ago. And we know that Coughlin has been, you know, he was a great college coach. He was a great assistant NFL coach. He was a great NFL head coach. And won two Super Bowls in New York with the Giants. I still think, even at 72 years of age, the desire is still there for Tom Coughlin to return to the sidelines and coach a team. Now, is he going to do that to Doug Marrone? I'm not so sure. Do I think that's necessarily fair? No, I don't. Do I think Marrone's done a great job this year with Jacksonville? How could you possibly look at the job that Doug Marrone's done this year and say, you know what, he's done a nice job? No, he hasn't. Listen, the report over the weekend, it should surprise nobody that the Jaguars are going to part ways with Blake Bortles after this year. I mean, if they ever decided as an organization to roll back with Bortles and say, you know what, we're good to go, it was just a down year, then they're lost. Bogus and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. That's where Teddy Bridgewater, I think, would fit. That would make sense down in Jacksonville. For a win-now team, as long as that knee holds up, he's a better quarterback. Play off the ground game with Leonard Fournette. All of that, to me, makes perfect sense. Getting rid of Bortles makes perfect sense. Do I think they're going to change head coach? I think Coughlin's intrigued with the possibility. I think he's interested potentially in the opportunity. And he is running the organization. Do I think he returns to the sidelines next year? If I right now had to make a bet one way or the other, I'd probably say he doesn't. But that doesn't mean it doesn't change. Jaguars go out this week and get their doors blown off by the Redskins. And they're 7.5-point favorites with the Redskins quarterback scenario. Could that change the feeling around Tom Coughlin? Yeah. Yeah, it could. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I think it's quite possible it could. And speaking of the Redskins, talk about 2018. How about Josh Johnson? Who I believe was he the number one overall pick in the Alliance for American Football? I believe he was. Who hadn't started or played in a football game in 5 years in the National Football League, was brought in by the Washington Redskins. Familiarity that Gruden had with him, was a backup in Cincinnati when Gruden was the offensive coordinator, Jay Gruden, that is, for the Cincinnati Bengals. How about Josh Johnson, this one? And I love video games. Haven't played them in a while, but I do love video games. I was thinking about getting my kids the Nintendo Switch for Christmas. I don't know if that's a good... I don't know if my wife would be ecstatic with that, but was kicking the tie, was thinking about that last night while I was searching online. Anyway, I digress. How about Josh Johnson learning his teammates' names by playing Madden? Think about it. Nothing No headline says 2018 NFL football more than that. Josh Johnson, who stepped in for a putrid Mark Sanchez this past week when the Skins were getting absolutely obliterated by the Giants, down 40-0 at one point in time, steps into that game and is learning, you know, oh, you're Trent Williams. Oh, nice to meet you. Yeah, you're a pretty good player in Madden. You're AP, Adrian Peterson. Nice job. Hall of Fame running back. Learned his teammates' names down in Washington on Madden. Jim Diapoulos is going to join us. Former official in the National Football League. We'll talk about the Bobby Wagner play last night, the early play in the Eagles-Cowboys games on Sunday, and really what has gone wrong here as the officiating has taken a step back in the National Football League here in 2018. We'll talk to Jim. We'll do that next. It's Mark Melusis flying solo here on this Tuesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Mark Melusis flying solo. Taz is off. Jim Diapoulos, we're going to talk a little officiating coming up. The National Football League, former official in the NFL, will join me here momentarily. Heller's in the building, second time this morning. What's up, Brad?
What's up, Moose?
How are you? All right?
All right. Doing okay.
Morning rolling along?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we got talking about this holiday party from yesterday, and we talked about, you know, they had appetizers out and everything. I just didn't eat enough. So we're just talking out in the newsroom, like, you know, stories from last night. It's like, gosh, the one thing I thought about is like, I didn't eat enough food. And here we are 12 hours later and I'm
Did
starving,
they have pigs in the blanket?
I didn't see pigs in a blanket.
Crab cakes.
Oh, if there were crab cakes, then I missed those. Man, I would have devoured
cocktail.
Them. It was sliders. It was chicken
Coconut
fingers.
Coconut shrimp.
There was, I think there might have been shrimp. I don't know.
Potato croquettes.
There was tuna tartare maybe or something, I think.
Tartare.
I don't know. And if there was dessert, which is my thing, I dropped the ball by ducking out before that came out.
But. Well, you got to stay for it.
I know. I you know. Well, this coming from a guy who didn't even show up.
Well, thank you, Brad, for emphasizing that. Marash looks good out in the newsroom, I hear.
Yeah, he's in
bright-eyed
he's
and bushy
in rare form.
Yes,
covered well.
Yes,
covered well.
He looks good. It's like, are the Giants still alive? I go, yes, Sean.
Is there a Monday night game?
Take a nap.
I'm glad the food was good. That's great. You had a blast. You had a good time. You didn't do down. You didn't go down the slide when you entered the building. But for a good 2 hours, you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah,
you deserve it.
It was a good time. It was
good.
A good time. As we said, you should be there next year.
Next year, I will
work it in your schedule to make an appearance. It might not be in the same. There might not be a slide, but maybe there'll be monkey bars.
I could have gotten there maybe by 6:20, but the party ended at 7. That would have been. I would have shown up, and they would have been serving. You know, the dessert. They would have been like, "Here's a cupcake." I'm like, yeah.
I mean, one cupcake's better than no cupcake.
No, that's true. But
one drink's better than no drink.
That's a good point. Thank you, Brad. And now I feel guilty. I should have went. You're right. It was a bad job by me. All right.
We forgive you.
Thank you, Brad. Take it away.
All right, Moose. We'll start with the Monday night game. Russell Wilson threw for just 72 yards because the Seahawks did all their damage on the ground against the Vikings.
And he gets it again. Straight ahead. Puts his head down. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. And Chris Carson was not going to be denied as he just got hit at the one and fought his way in.
Steve Rabel called it Seahawks radio. 214 yards rushing for Seattle. They also scored on defense 18 seconds after that Carson touchdown run. 21-7, the Seahawks beat the Vikings for their fourth straight win. Here is Russell Wilson on the team effort.
When we really needed it in the fourth quarter, we found a way. We got some big runs, and then Chris Carson, you know, getting in the end zone. We needed that touchdown, and then we got a turnover and scampered in the end zone. Coleman did, so that was really cool.
The Seahawks are 8-5. The Vikings 6-6-1. They hold the two wild card spots now in the NFC. NBA, the Warriors won their fourth straight, 116-108 over the Timberwolves. Steph Curry, 7 3-pointers, 38 points. Draymond Green returned from his toe injury. He had 7 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists. Here's head coach Steve Kerr.
The first few minutes, we looked different. You know, he got a couple rebounds and pushed the ball, and everybody else sort of said, oh, yeah, we got to run. Draymond's got the ball, and he was out ahead of the play a couple times. So he gives us a different dimension.
At Staples Center, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade meeting for the final time with Wade set to retire, and they squared off on the final possession.
LeBron on Wade. 10 seconds to go. Wade can't get a shot off. Shoots a three out of desperation. No good. Magruder. Winslow for three in the tie. He missed it. 1 second left. LeBron hurls it into the air.
And the Lakers held on. 108-105. John Ireland called it Lakers radio. James outscored Wade in that one, 28-15. Celtics won their sixth in a row, 113-100 over the Pelicans. The Mavs making it 10 straight at home, 101-76 over the Magic. Paul George went off for 31 points. Thunder beat the Jazz, 122-113. The other late games, Clippers topped the Suns in overtime, 123-119. Nuggets beat the Grizzlies, 105-99. The big news so far at baseball's winter meetings in Las Vegas, a big rumor right now, a three-way deal between the Yankees, Mets, and Marlins, with Noah Syndergaard talked about going to the Yankees and JT Realmuto to the Mets, but USA Today says the Marlins are downplaying those reports. Moose?
All right. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate that. We'll get into that rumor and some of the rumors going out in Vegas as the baseball winter meetings are a day in, but let's talk a little NFL. Jim Diapoulos joins us right now, former NFL referee. Hey, Jim, Mark Malusis with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Hey, great to be with you, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jim. I'm doing well. The officiating, as it does each and every year, but it seems like this year it's been more under the microscope than even a year ago, but you know, the Wagner blocked field goal last night. You know, how do you throw a flag initially and then pick up the flag and say that's a clean block when the rule, I mean, the rule pretty much says what he did you cannot do.
The rule is clear. It basically says a player cannot use his hands, you know, on an opponent or a teammate to gain leverage to jump through the gap to block a field goal. It's, you know, it's kind of stunning that they picked it up. The umpire made the call. It was his call to make. I don't know what happened communication-wise out on the field and who talked him out of it. But, you know, those are the things that happen out there. And sometimes guys are out there, they try to over-officiate. They try to get things perfect. And they make mistakes.
Well, Jim, take us through that a little bit because you've been on the field. You know, I haven't. Most of my listening audience probably has not. How does that happen when you throw the flag, you've seen it. You know, how do you when you get into that circle and you're chatted up with four other guys there? How do you get talked out of the foul call and picking up the flag?
Basically, and I'm just speculating here on this, in this situation, is that the umpire made the call and he saw, you know, basically a foul occur. And then another member of the crew must have got involved and said, you know, maybe he didn't use his hands, to gain the leverage. Maybe he just jumped out there. So there was a lot of probably discussion that went on, and with the umpire didn't have a real strong feeling for it, but it's frustrating that officials get involved when they shouldn't be getting involved. Sometimes we say, you're fishing in someone else's pond, and this is what probably happened on this. Somebody kind of looked over there, one of the officials looked over there, and just didn't feel that it was enough for a foul. But gosh, you know, that's a big play in that game, in a big game, and, you know, you can't be taking, making a call like that and then picking it up.
Jim, do you feel like you've done the job? Do you feel like the officiating is getting better or regressing?
You know, it's a really tough question because, you know, we spoke earlier this year, and one of the things that has occurred is there's been a tremendous number of turnover of officials this year. This is the first year that they've had four new referees, and that is unprecedented in the National Football League. To have white hats, four of them leaving at one time. And what's happening right now is you have a lot of young officials that haven't been trained and don't have the experience that is necessary to work these games. You know, we used to be able to, you know, bring a new referee in and put four or five really well-experienced guys with them, you know, officials that have Super Bowl experience. However, you know, this year they just don't have those officials available. The staff is very young, So it's a learning experience, and it's been a very difficult year for them this year.
Well, okay. Do you think how big of a factor is experience in the job?
I would say probably the biggest factor. You know, you can officiate your whole life until you get to the National Football League, but the game is so much different. One of the advantages that we had early on when I was coming up and during my tenure in the National Football League is we had NFL Europe and the World League, and it was a tremendous developmental program for the officials in the National Football League. Guys came in, you know, they came in and we went and picked the top college officials and took them to Europe to learn how to officiate. You know, guys can make calls, but you have to understand philosophy. You have to understand what is expected out there, when to call a foul and when not to call a foul. And the NFL Europe gave us that opportunity. Now, they don't have that opportunity. They bring them right in out of college. They try to get the best available. But basically, these guys are learning on Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays. That's their training, and it's during the season. And it takes more than just a few games to really understand the philosophy and the nuances of the of officiating in the NFL.
You know, and Jim, man, we're talking to Jim Diapoulos, former NFL referee here on this Tuesday morning. Mark Malusis with you. It is Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Jim, even when they tried to, you know, they create the all-star crew for that Rams-Chiefs game, and you get 9 penalties on the Chiefs in the opening quarter. I mean, I understand trying to set the tone and tempo of the game. That's not what NFL fans want to go out there and see. So even when the NFL's trying to overcome some of the inexperience across the board in the NFL, even when that transpires, you have a first quarter in which penalties are getting thrown left and right.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mark. I think everybody thought it was an all-star crew, but, you know, they're not all-star crews. I mean, you know, they try to put guys in there that have more experience, that have more, that feel more comfortable with other certain officials. But, you know, when you try to put crews together like that, it's very difficult. As you start the season, you're on a crew and you try to get, you know, some kind of cohesiveness between the guys working out there. And, you know, and I'm telling you, it takes time. You can't do it in a few games. And sometimes you just can't even do it in a season. It takes a while to understand what's going on. And again, we have an awful lot of young officials out there, and they just need to do a better job training these guys and getting them some experience and getting them some work.
All right, Jim, I one call this weekend that frustrated me, and I'm not an Eagle or a Cowboy fan. I just enjoyed the game, and the fourth quarter and overtime were absolutely amazing. But early on in that game, Jim, and I know you've seen this play and what have you, opening kickoff. They initially ruled that it was not a fumble. They go and that, you know, the Eagles recovered it, but they initially ruled down by contact. They go to replay, rule it a fumble. But even though the Eagles recovered it, say there was no clear fumble recovery by Philadelphia. How exactly do they come to, if they rule it a fumble, how exactly do they come to the give the ball back to the Dallas Cowboys after the Eagles recovered it?
Mark, you're asking a question that's so difficult to answer. And I can tell you, sitting at home and watching it, I had the same question. I talked to a number of rules individuals that had the same question. And, you know, situations occur on the field, and mistakes are made on the field. But, gosh, those are supposed to be corrected in New York with replay. That's what they have replay for. You know, they're saying that they didn't have a clear recovery. Gosh, I had a pretty good shot of about 4 or 5 Eagles on top of the ball.
There were only Eagles that were on top of the ball.
There was only
Eagle players. How could the Cowboys get the ball?
I saw that same shot. And then they get the voice from New York says, you know, Dallas ball. And, you know, it's hard for the officials, because the officials are just basically relaying what they are told from New York. So it's coming down pretty hard on the officials, but that's a decision that was made in New York. And gosh, it's just, I don't know what they were looking at. I think that was just just a flat-out mistake out there up in New York.
Yeah, that one was frustrating. The other thing, Jim, that it's the Juju Smith-Schuster touchdown at the end of the first half of the Raider game was another example. Why not err on the side of calling his feet down instead of going through everything and calling him out of bounds and going through the process because he got both toes down? I know it was a difficult call, but you see these athletes, NFL players in today's day and age, the way that they're able to get their toes down and stay in bounds is just utterly ridiculous. I know the game is fast, but why not err on giving him the touchdown and then go to the replay? If it gets overturned, it gets overturned. Is it a little bit more embarrassing to call the guy out of bounds and then you go to replay and it gets overturned and then called a touchdown? Why not call it the other way?
Mark, you hit the nail right on the head. One of the things that I preached all the years that I was up there is, especially on the catches, the tight catches to the sidelines, the toe taps, the catches that some of these guys make, give them the catches and then let replay reverse it. You know, I see officials trying to over-officiate, trying to make that great call when basically they're missing things. You know, take for granted that these players are making these catches and then let replay overturn it if it's that egregious, if you missed it that bad. So, you know, I agree with you, and I think that's something that they've got to talk about philosophically, but I don't know if they teach them that basically philosophy right now.
We're talking to Jim Diapoulos, former NFL referee. Jim, two more before we let you go. You know, for the NFL fan, how difficult is this job that we're asking perfection from?
It's difficult, and it gets more difficult every year. You know, it was difficult when I was on the field, and then it was difficult when I was in the office, but it's far more difficult now with the camera angles and the looks that they're getting, plus the social media. It's amazing that the number of people that really understand rules and are always right on top of what's going on. They're not always right about what the officials are doing, but you know the officials are under this microscope all the time, and it's a really very very difficult job. But they're that's what they've chosen to do, and this is a chosen few that get to this point, and so they've got to start to step up and do a better job.
All right, Jim? I'll ask you. You know it better than anybody. How do you think? How do we see improvement from officials across the board?
I'll tell you one thing we don't do is making them full-time officials. That will not improve officials. What officials have to do is they just have to do a better job training them and getting the experience in there and getting the proper the right officials to work the games.
Jim Diapoulos, a former NFL referee. Hey, Jim, always great chatting with you. Talk a little football. I appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll do it again real soon.
My pleasure, Mark. Have a great day.
You have a great day as well. And, you know, great. It gives you the insight. And it is it's a thankless job. It's a job in which, you're going to get called out if you're dead wrong. But when you have replay, you're supposed to correct some of the bad calls on the field. And when replay solidifies or, you know, confirms the bad calls on the field, that's what drives you crazy as an NFL fan. I'll go to my grave looking at that Eagle, that opening kickoff where Lewis fumbles the football and they initially call it down by contact, clearly a fumble. They rule it a fumble, but then saying it's no clear recovery by Philadelphia when there were only four or five Eagles that were on top of the football. Made no sense. No sense whatsoever. We're going to not head out live to Vegas, but we're going to chat about what's transpiring in Vegas coming your way next. The winter meetings, baseball winter meetings. And if you know a Met fan and they've got a frown this morning, I'll tell you the reason why. It's Taz, it's Moose. Mark Malus is flying solo, CBS Sports Radio.
Give Taz and the Moose a call, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Hey, everyone, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all right now at geico.com. Sunday, it's a doubleheader day, and it's all about the playoffs. Miami takes on Minnesota, and then a huge game with two teams fighting to win their divisions. New England collides with Pittsburgh. The day kicks off with the NFL Today, powered by Ram at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. Winter meetings are a day and a half in, out in Las Vegas, Nevada. Great spot to hold the winter meetings and the baseball winter meetings. And Bryce Harper is not signed anywhere. Manny Machado has not signed anywhere. The two big free agents, position player-wise, and the two big stars in Major League Baseball. You know, interesting that, you know, I don't know exactly Harper or Vegas kid. I don't know exactly where, you know, the market is for him right now. I know I heard an interview with Rizzo, their general manager, say that he has not completely closed the door on him, even though the owner a week and a half ago did. They offered him a 10-year, $300 million contract at the end of the MLB regular season. He and his agent decided, Scott Boras decided to turn it down. Reportedly, they're looking for about $350 million. We'll see exactly where Harper does end up, and maybe he can't exactly close the door on the Washington Nationals. It seems like the Yankees are really hot and heavy after Manny Machado, as their general manager, Brian Cashman, confirmed yesterday that he has had several conversations with Machado's agents, even though it was reported that the Yankees won't go to $300 million. We know that Machado's been enamored with the potential of being a Yankee, so maybe money isn't the biggest thing that's on Machado's mind, putting him into the spot where he needs to be. Not saying that he's willing to take $150 or $180 million. The Yankees are going to still have to spend, but they might not necessarily have to go to $300 million to get the guy that they tried to trade for this past baseball season, as he got paired off from the Baltimore Orioles to the Los Angeles Dodgers. That brings on the rumor that came down late last night, East Coast time. I would say around 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. Those around the Mets, the Marlins, the Yankees, and national writers like Ken Rosenthal started to report that there is a potential three-team deal that has been chatted about, in which Gary Sanchez, the Yankee star catcher, would end up in Miami, that JT Realmuto, the Marlins star catcher, would end up with the Mets, and that Noah Syndergaard. Now, these are the bare bones parameters. There'd be other players involved in the deal, but the three biggest components, Noah Syndergaard would end up with the Yankees. And if you see a Met fan walking around, that is why a Met fan this morning, after that report last night and those talks and those conversations that did take place, to the point where there was a report that the Yankees were pushing for a deal to get done last night, and then there were some that were saying the Yankees are interested in Met pitching, it doesn't necessarily have to be Noah Syndergaard. But if they're gonna give up a guy like Gary Sanchez, who Brian Cashman earlier this offseason said he'd be unwilling to trade, you would have to imagine that Syndergaard would be the pitcher that would be going back to the Yankees. And the Met fan is bothered this morning. I'll tell you this, I'd be stunned. Now, Brody Van Wagenen, the former agent, new Mets general manager, in his early 40s, is doing things a little bit differently. It used to be very difficult. And if you're in Chicago right now, listen to the sound of my voice, think about a big trade of stars between the White Sox and the Cubs. Does it happen a lot? No. Think about a big star trade between the Dodgers and the Angels out in Los Angeles. Does that happen a lot? No. Think about the Mets and the Yankees. Does that happen a lot? No. I mean, I think the last trade between the Mets and the Yankees was Stanton for Felix Heredia. Mike Stanton, that is, the reliever. Not Giancarlo Stanton, formerly Mike Stanton, the outfielder. So that usually doesn't transpire, doesn't happen. Now, Van Wagenen has already let it be known that he's going to do things a little bit differently. And he's a guy that, when he was an agent, did represent Noah Syndergaard and is very familiar. And let it be known early on during his reign as general manager that he'd be willing to trade Syndergaard, then walk that back and said he's not going to go anywhere. We'd have to be overwhelmed in a deal. We know there are a lot of teams that are involved in the talks on JT Realmuto. and that the Mets aren't the only one. The Dodgers are intrigued. The Dodgers were the Marlins asked the Dodgers for Cody Bellinger plus in a deal for JT Realmuto, which is a deal that the Dodgers are not going to make, but that's what they asked for. And there's reportedly an upwards of 10 teams that are interested in the 27-year-old backstop for the Miami Marlins. So you're going to have to pay a pretty penny. And we know the catching scenario for the Mets has been a huge issue for quite some time. And we do know that Brody Van Wagenen and the Mets are enamored with Realmuto to the point where you would trade Noah Syndergaard, and Syndergaard would end up with a Yankee, cut hair and all. I think it's a deal that works for both teams. The Yankees are desperate for a power arm, desperate for a guy that they can throw in at the top of the rotation that they believe in October can dominate lineups, and Noah Syndergaard clearly can. But that is a hefty price. See, there's a rub to it. Number one is you trade Noah Syndergaard and you are the Mets, you better win the trade. Number two, the last thing you want to see is Noah Syndergaard helping the Yankees win one World Series after another in the Bronx. Number three, the pressure that then it would place on Realmuto as a player. Because he's not Johnny Bench. He's not the best catcher in the sport. He's not Pudge Rodriguez. He is a great player. But there's limitations to just how good of a player Realmuto is, even at 27 years of age. See, for the Mets, when you are able to trade Realmuto and you say trade a Brandon Nimmo, or even if you traded a Michael Conforto, the pressure on Realmuto would be lessened because of the impact of the players that you traded, even though I love Conforto as a hitter. You trade a Noah Syndergaard, who Met fans have no interest in trading whatsoever, no less ending up in a Yankee uniform. The expectations, I think, then that it would place on JT Realmuto would then be unreachable. Because not only would he have to be good, he would have to be great. Not only would he have to be great, he might have to be the best catcher in the sport. And I don't know, and he's really good, and at times he's great. I don't know if Realmuto as a player can live up to those kind of expectations. So that's where I find a deal, even though it's fantastic to think about, and I think the deal would work on a lot of different players. We know the Marlins, who are now loaded up with former Yankee executives down there in Miami for Jeter. And Denbo is down there and is in love with Gary Sanchez, and they'd love to get the hands on the 25-year-old catcher and the offensive machine for the Yankees. And the Mets are enamored with Realmuto, and the Yankees are looking for a young power arm that they can build that rotation around long-term to go along with Luis Severino for the next 10 years. It's fun to think about. Do I think that deal ends up getting done? Last night someone told me 40%. It's got a 40% chance of getting done. There's a lot of things that need to be worked out. It's got to get cleared by Met ownership. But it's a 40% deal. And I'll tell you this, if it's the right deal, the Mets can win without Noah Syndergaard. They don't need Noah Syndergaard to win. I get you don't want to trade him, but there's also a lot of holes on the Mets that they need to fill. And they're not going to be able to sign one prize free agent after another. It's an intriguing one. It was a quiet opening day at the winter meetings. Maybe day two picks up today in Las Vegas. We'll have it all covered right here on CBS Sports Radio. The Three comes your way next. Taz Moose, Melusa Solo, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.